Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, for the technician that wants to get real. Follow along as we talk to industry professionals and address hot topics that we all face. Along the way, we'll learn tips and tricks. I'm your host, Trent Manning. Let's have some fun. Welcome to Episode 1 of the Real Turf Techs Podcast. Today, we're talking to Tony Bavolo, equipment manager at Trinity Forest Golf Club in Dallas, Texas. Trinity Forest is an 18-hole private course with a short par 3 course and an expansive practice facility. Tony has two technicians working with him in the shop. Let's get right into this. Welcome, Tony.
Hello there, Mr. Manning. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I really appreciate you coming on this and talking to everyone. How did you get into the turf industry?
So I took more of the abstract route, I guess, into our profession. I started in high school. I was working a normal, you know, high school job at a restaurant, and I started working at a golf club down the road for free. I worked on the maintenance staff for free to play golf for free. So The superintendent let me come in the mornings and all that good stuff before I went to my regular job and fill divots or whatever he needed done. And in turn, he let me play golf. So that kind of sparked the interest into getting into golf. From there, I have an uncle that is, well, he's retired now. He was a golf pro at Belrive Country Club in St. Louis and then St. Albans Country Club in St. Louis, two very nice private courses out in that area. And I said, hey, you know, I've been playing golf since I was three. So I'm very, very familiar with the game. I said, hey, I think, you know, I was never really great in school. I didn't know what I really wanted to do. I said, hey, I think I'm going to get into golf. So, you know, with his blessing and backing and same with my parents, I signed up and enrolled in a golf college that's in right outside of Hilton Head, South Carolina. It's called the Professional Golfers Career College. And what you do is you earn an associate's degree in professional golf management. So it's a business degree kind of geared towards country club management, hospitality, stuff like that to be a golf pro. So went through that whole song and dance, passed my PAT, my playing ability test, got an assistant golf pro job in South Carolina at a course called Berkeley Hall. And I got burnt out. We worked, you know, a lot of hours. I wasn't happy. So I went to the superintendent on site at Berkeley Hall and said, hey, I kind of want to become a superintendent if possible. You know, the grin of, man, the market's flooded, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I think you'd be great, but hear me out. You're mechanically inclined, aren't you? I said, yeah, you know, I'm fairly mechanically inclined. I like to wrench on my own stuff. I never did it for a living. And he said, hey, I want you to place a call to a gentleman at Belfair Plantation, which is right down the road from Berkeley Hall. There's a gentleman there by the name of Skip Hines. And
don't tell me Skip Hines, really?
Yeah. Yeah. No, unfortunately.
No. I think a lot of Skip. I'm just kidding there.
No, I do too. And I owe Skip a ton. He, you know, other than him teaching me a lot of, you know, mechanical ability or mechanical skills for what I do now, but he really brought me under his wing and taught me the art of a cutting unit, which in our position, that's A1. I mean, you can be the greatest mechanic. Sure. Yeah. You can be the greatest mechanic on earth, but if you can't set a cutting unit correctly, then you're no good to a golf course. Right. So I had my first meeting with Skip and, he basically said, man, if you dedicate yourself to me and the club and, you know, you really learn and hone in, you're going to be just fine. You figure out where you want to go and we'll get you there. So about a year and a half under Skip, I put out for my first gig at Trinity Forest and here I am. Rest is history.
Man, that's crazy. A year and a half in the industry and then you end up at a place like Trinity Forest. Impressive.
I appreciate that. I was 25 when I took the Trinity Forest gig, and it was, for people that don't know, it was a brand new Corin Crenshaw design golf course right outside Dallas, the city of Dallas. It's in South Dallas, built on a landfill. So the way I looked at it was, it's a growing. I kind of have some time to get my feet wet in the head roll. You know, I wasn't jumping right into an established property where I had to kind of hit the ground running. I was able to kind of figure out my nuances and how I wanted to do it. I got to set the shop up how I wanted to.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, it was a blessing, and it and I wanted to relocate to Dallas, so it was like it was one of those things where it was meant to be, you know.
Right, I got you. I know, that's awesome. Tell me your greens, Bermuda.
We do. We have Champion Bermuda greens.
Okay.
And we have a lot of them. We have, I couldn't tell, I mean, the exact acreage. We have a, and we just covered greens today. That's kind of, oh, wow. I mean, you guys can't see my hair, but we have a big cold front coming through Dallas, this week through the weekend. And that's a big thing too. I make sure that I'm involved in that and my technicians are involved in helping the guys. But we covered greens today, and we have a vast acreage of greens over at that property. So, so we have Champion Bermuda grass greens. Our fairways, tees, surrounds are all Trinity Zoysia. Another kind of nuance getting into that job being is, I guess you can say, green as I was. Yeah, yeah. It was called L1F Zoysia at the time. It was a strain of Zoysia that was new to a lot of people. We were the first golf course to go really wall to wall with it. So it was a cool learning experience to, I mean, in Belfair, we had Pass Palom, which is similar, you know, in a way, but it was still, there was a lot of stuff that I had to figure out that I leaned on a lot of people to, you know, to get that place dialed in. John Patterson at AAC was one of them, and he helped me out a ton.
Yeah, I'm sure. Zoysia, my first dealings with Zoysia fairways, was very eye-opening. You know, I've been, you know, used to Bermuda, and you can get away with a lot of stuff on Bermuda, but when it comes to Zoysia, it shows up every little imperfection on your setup of a cutting unit.
It does. It magnifies it, drastically. And I guess you can say the good thing about where we're at is, they developed that Zoysia to play very firm and fast, not sticky. Like, you know, you get a Cavalier, a Meyer, or a Zorro. It's got a very small leaf blade, but it's tough on our cutting units. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot, we have about 100 and total at the club. At the shop, we have about 130, 135 cutting units there.
Oh, wow. I
mean, we have no
for 18 hole course.
Yes. We have no formal rough. So we have one rough mower in the fleet that we, you know, mow like our cutlass with it, the driving range, you know, so everything is tee to green fairway mower.
I got to get out there and come visit you for sure.
It's very cool, man. It's very cool. It's,
will you take me fishing too?
Bet your ass. If I can't swear on this, I just did. Bet your ass. We're going fishing.
All right. No, that sounds like a plan. I would love that. Leading into our next question, what's your daily shop routine?
Daily shop routine. So, in the beginning, I don't have three technicians. I have three technicians, including myself. So I have two underneath me. I'm sorry. I might've filled, told you,
not a problem.
Told you wrong. So I have two guys underneath me. First thing in the morning, I try to go sit in with, all the superintendents, and we kind of get a feel for the day. Now I'll just use now as an example, whatever they're using. We really don't pull out equipment. A lot of that they leave up to the assistants and the interns. We have a lot of summer and winter interns that come in, so they kind of do that. But we make sure we start every piece of equipment that they're using, make sure it's warmed up properly, make sure everything is, you know, ready for the operator, make sure everything's running as it should. Once they leave the barn, we're right behind them. We're mowing greens, rolling greens, fairways, whatever we're doing, we're checking behind them. And we stay on the golf course for about an hour in the morning just to make sure everything is, you know, up to par, I guess you can say.
Yep.
So we hit the golf course and we hit the north side of the property. The north side of the property, we have a 9-hole par 3 course. We're also the home course to SMU's college golf team. So we have a very, very big practice facility. So we go and check on that side as well. And then we get back to the shop, kind of put our heads together and kind of figure out a plan for the day. Some of that's already figured out week to week. If we're going to grind, if we're going to do services, what we're going to do. And we get after it.
While we're talking about grinding and servicing and all that kind of stuff, are you using any software or anything to help you keep track of your maintenance, preventive maintenance, and that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I use Trims. I've been using Trims now. Well, I used it with Skip at Belford. That's what Skip used. Mm-hmm. And I was very familiar with it. So it was kind of an easy, you know, I guess I could have looked at others, but I felt like Trims did what we needed it to do very efficiently. So I implemented that in my operation. And we still use it to this day. So yeah, I do use Trims.
Cool. All right. Awesome. What have you fabricated lately?
So we got some things coming up. We're going to do some stuff for our chem room. We're going to do some tables in there for those guys. We're going to do a big drainage rack. I think I saw, I can't remember who it was, built a really nice drainage rack that I kind of want to do for drainage pipe. We do a lot of drainage where we're at. So that's on the docket. But what we did recently is we built a really nice metal shop table for outside of our shop. And then we built a really nice metal and cedar awning to go over that table. So that we just finished that a couple months ago. But that's kind of the last thing that we did.
What will you be using that for?
We use it a lot for, I personally use it a lot for welding. Our shop isn't as big in my area as it should be for three technicians and the amount of equipment that we have. It's pretty tight. So I kind of get the bug every winter where I'm like, okay, how can we maximize space in the shop and be efficient? And so, I mean, it's to the point where I'm putting caster wheels on our drill press and putting the drill press in the parts room. And, the big part of the awning was I moved the parts washer outside of the shop, right outside of our door. I didn't want that getting rain and water in it and the solution. Right. And it's just not obviously kosher to do. So, always just figuring out ways to maximize the space that we're given is kind of the reasoning behind the awning and the table outside and all that stuff.
Okay. Yep. Just curious. We all got to do what we got to do to
make it happen. I mean, of course.
What's your favorite tool and why?
Ooh, so I have two of them and they're drastically different from each other.
Okay.
I could have three, but I'm going to stick to two.
Okay.
My number one favorite tool in the shop is my Pi tape.
Okay.
By far. I mean it doesn't lie to you. It keeps us in check with what we're doing. It validates that our procedures of grinding or cutting units is accurate and within spec. And I think it doesn't get implemented enough. It's such a cheap tool. It doesn't get implemented enough in most of the shops that I've been walking or I've had a chance to walk through.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I know there's guys use them, but I don't think it's the norm, and it probably should be the norm.
I agree. And I think with all the social media between technicians that we have now, a lot of guys are, and I don't want to say that they're not, they're not aware that it exists or whatever the case is, but I just think that now it's becoming the norm, which is good. I mean, it's invaluable in my shop. I would say my second favorite tool is my power probe.
Okay.
Because I hate electrical. I do. Okay. I'm not bad at it, but it really bugs me. I don't know why it does, but the power probe has got me out of some sticky situations before. And actually I got the power probe as a gift from Skip. I believe it was for getting the job or
okay. Skip,
he gifted me that power probe and
that's awesome.
I use it often.
So tell me a little bit about, power probe. I've seen them before. I've never used one. I've heard guys rave about it. What's so great about it?
It's just nice. testing circuits. It's nice being able to, and you can get in trouble if you really don't know what you're doing with it, because you're shooting 12 volts into stuff you just don't know. But, you know, we had an issue with, I'll use a recent one. We had a Dakota 440 and we were having issues with power not coming from the control panel to the conveyor, whatever it was. And just how quick it was for me to isolate which circuit it was, what it was with the power probe. It makes life simple in my opinion. So I enjoy the power probe a lot.
Awesome.
What are yours? I'm curious of yours.
Oh, well, you're going to really put me on the spot here.
Yeah. Come on.
And,
now. Is it a hammer?
No. That's a good one though. That's a good one. It's actually, you're probably even going to laugh harder. It's a Streamlight Stylus Pro. It's a flashlight.
That's a great answer. Streamlights are fantastic. That's a great answer.
And it fits in my pocket and it's my everyday carry. I don't leave the house without it. No matter where I'm going, what I'm doing, I always have this flashlight with me.
Love it.
I'm on number 4 or 5. They do wear out. They have a lifetime warranty. So I got 2 now. So when one breaks, I got a backup, because I don't, and you get so dependent on it. If I happen to leave it in the toolbox or something, you know, get busy cleaning up or whatever, I'm really lost without it.
I hear you. I mean,
you know, kids in the car, they drop something and hey, let's
shining around.
Yep, shine my flashlight down there. That's it.
That's right.
That would be number one. And I appreciate you putting me on the spot there.
I got to keep you on your toes. You know that.
No, it's all good. Get ready for tips and tricks. Do you have any tips or tricks that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, and I have 2. And one of them is going to be on the mechanical side, and I've done a couple posts. I did a post on Twitter about it. And I had a lot of guys reach out to me, which I thought was cool. And then I want to do one that's more, I guess you can say, privy to what we do for a living. So the first one, I would say the mechanical, and this is more speaking towards your John Deere customers with quick adjust reels. We have a fleet. Our fleet is mowing equipment is all green and we have red mixed in and then some other stuff. But, I think a lot of guys, run into some issues with QA5 reels because they're not paying attention. And this is leading back into your pie tape. They're not paying attention to, or they don't have a means of measuring their cutting unit diameter to figure out when they can flip their bed knife eccentric on that cutting unit. Right, so, right. The guys at John Deere engineered a bed knife bolt eccentric that once that reel hits 4.75 or 4.73, I think it's 4.75, I believe is the exact number. Once it hits that diameter, they allow you to flip that bed knife eccentric and then reinstall your bed knife to bring that bed knife back to the bed knife attitude that reel would come as a new cutting unit with a true 5-inch reel. I get quite a few messages from local guys because they know that we run a lot of deer, and are saying, hey, I'm getting a little bit of scuffing on the greens, I'm getting some bed knife drag, you know what, or I'm not getting as aggressive as a cut as I think I was getting prior to them being new. Flipping that bed knife eccentric and talking the rear end of that bed knife back up into the reel frame is a lifesaver. And it's a really cool what they did at Deere doing that, because it does extend, especially, I mean, we mow greens at 0.95 through the season. So we're mowing
a fixed head or a floating head.
No, we use 220E. So we use a floating head.
Okay.
But our greens are Core Crenshaw greens. They are very, very hilly, very undulated. So we don't have a lot of room for error. So if we were to get down to a 4.7, 4.6 in our reel diameter and didn't flip that bed knife bushing back up, we would see a lot of dragging. So just, I would think that a good tip and trick would just be to, you know, just pay attention to that diameter. If you're seeing some weird stuff like that, check that bed knife eccentric out and see if you're within your specs of where you should be with that. Cause it could help you in the long run. Just, you know, being more proactive than reactive, you know?
Yep.
Awesome. And then I would say my second tip and trick would be, is to use your network, use your peers, and use the social media platforms that we have available to us now, the Twitter, Facebook, your phone, just picking up your phone and calling guys in the area or guys that you look up to in the industry that run an operation that you're that you see is on the higher end, and be resourceful. Ask questions. There's no shame in asking your peer, hey, are you seeing this, or have you found something for this? Or we all want each other to strive for the same common goal. We all wanted to see each other succeed. And I just think that being resourceful and just reaching out is a huge tip and trick. Don't feel like you need to be the know-it-all of everything, because we all don't know everything. And there's a lot of guys out there that may have experienced an issue that you're pulling your hair out to try to figure out. And it could be something simple.
Right. No, 100% correct. And I remember, I don't know how, this has been probably a couple of years ago, I remember reaching out to you, and you were trying different roller configurations and the double cut marks and all that stuff. And, I remember talking about that, and I've been doing this way longer than you have, but I'm still struggling with it. I mean, we all struggle from time to time.
100%. And it's funny because that was that information that I gave you, hopefully it helped, but that information that I gave you was achieved from my resources. Like I said, I reached out to John Patterson at Atlanta Athletic Club, and I was dealing with some double cut issues on our Zoysia fairways. And he was the one that turned me on to a lot of the stuff that I gave you. So it all comes full circle, man.
That's right, man. It just does. It does. And I would say, I mean, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but I would say 95% of the guys in our position are willing to help anybody else.
Any time of the day. Well, I won't say any time of the day, 'cause I might call you back, but right, you're totally exactly. Right. I think the days of the closed shop equipment manager, to where everybody keeps their stuff on the hush hush, is dwindling and over. We all want to see each other succeed, and we're all here to hopefully shed some light or help in any way. And I'll be the first to say, I don't know everything. And if I can reach out to a buddy or a peer that might, you know, being able to help me a little bit, I don't see the harm in that. I just don't. Right.
Exactly. And I mean, honestly, this is the whole reason for this podcast. I mean, that's what I want. That's my main goal and objective for having this podcast, is having people like you on and discussing common problems that we all have. And hopefully somebody learned something along the way.
No, it's great what the GCSAA is doing, and they're getting, you know, and I know you had a lot to do with it. So, and Stephen Tucker and Skip and everybody throughout the beginning of it, but it, you know, getting us secondary education to hone our skills, to keep us, you know, through the certificate program, to keep us
for sure
learning and growing, and we're connecting with each other. I mean, doing stuff at GIS. I know I spoke I don't believe I spoke with you the year or two ago, but speaking with other equipment managers during seminars, I mean, that's huge.
Exactly. And, I mean, I'm really proud of what GCS is done, and I believe, you know, I mean, they're going to continue. Hopefully, I'm crossing my fingers that something happens this year for his certification for equipment managers.
That'd be great. That'd be awesome.
And I need to congratulate you for passing level 1 and 2.
Thank you, man.
Back to back, knocked them out like it was no big deal.
It's winter time.
Get it done.
Just get it done. I've been putting it off for too long. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to just knock them both out. So it was cool. Awesome. I appreciate that though. Thank you.
Yep. Do you have any, side projects or a side hustle?
I do. You want to talk about? I do. Yeah. I do quite a bit of grinding for, a lot of, athletic fields in the area, schools, ISDs, independent school districts, smaller golf courses that don't have the means. A couple of customers from our John Deere account manager have high-end properties in the area that have equipment that I take care of on the side.
Okay. Awesome.
So yeah, no, I do a lot of stuff like that for people. Yeah.
Well, and that's one reason I want to put that question in here, that I'm going to ask everybody, because I think just about all of us have some kind of side hustle, or if we don't currently, we did in the past. Right.
Does losing bass tournaments count as a side hustle? Because I'm not really raking in the money doing that, but I'm having a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, sure. We'll count it.
Okay.
I'm a huge fisherman too. And I don't think we've talked about this, and I don't know that it pertains to the podcast, but hopefully the folks will enjoy hearing it anyway. In the wintertime, I fish every Sunday morning from safe light till noon in a pot.
Okay. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Right. And then the summer, I fish two nights a week. I fish Monday night and Wednesday night, which it's hell making it into the golf course the next morning, 'cause I get home at midnight or whatever. It's terrible.
I fish Tuesday nighters, so I know okay. what it's like.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. That's awesome, man.
Yep.
That was awesome. So I can't wait to get out there. You're going to take me to Lake Fork, or
I will take you to Lake Fork.
Okay.
I fish a tournament series with my dad, on Saturdays, like every other Saturday or every Saturday. It's a team tournament.
Okay.
We got one coming up in 2 weeks. So yeah, I gotta get out there and find something, because we don't have anything right now. So
I gotcha. Yeah, no, it's been, the fishing's been really tough down here too.
So what do you just bass fish, crappie fish? What,
just bass? Yeah, just bass. That's it.
I love it. You need to make your way down to Texas, man. We'll get after it.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. The local lake that's close to me here is not really a good bass fishing lake, but it's close, and that's where we go.
Of course.
Tell me about your Facebook group that you started.
Okay.
And when you started it, why you started it, all that stuff.
Right. So, me and another technician that was working under Skip, his name is Mike Allman. He now is working for Jerry Pate Equipment in North Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Me and him were, I can't remember if we were at lunch or something one day at Belfair, and we used to follow this Facebook group called the Wrenching Network, and it's a big mechanics group, but it's more for automotive guys. And we said, you know what, let's start one for us, for stuff that we do, because those guys don't, have any insight of what we do, or, can't really share ideas or bounce ideas or show cool stuff that we do. So we said to hell with it. We started, Turf Grass Equipment Managers, I believe is the exact title of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of started on a whim. And I think I shared it to Golf Course Maintenance, which is another big Facebook group, and it just took off. And, now we're, I think, just over 3,000 members, awesome. On there. Yeah, it's cool. And there's another fairly big Facebook group on there, that's got about the same. And I've tried to contact Facebook to see if we can just merge them together so we can have one big one, but that doesn't exist, I guess, for some strange reason. But it's just a place where guys like you and me can get on there and share problems, ideas, tips, tricks, fabrications, the cool stuff we're doing. And it's all in one centralized location versus getting lost in the whole Twitter feed of multiple pages and people doing stuff and this and this. It's all centralized, which was the whole goal behind it.
Something I put together, I don't know, it's been a few weeks ago on Twitter, is I done it's actually called, just like the podcast, Real Turf Techs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember, I got 106 members. And that's only because I've seen 106 golf course mechanics or, turf technicians that I put on the list. And you can pin that to the top of your feed and only look at that if you want to.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That was I didn't even know what I was doing at the time when I put it together. But I put the question out there on Twitter, has anybody done this? And I waited several hours and I said, I'll just do my own. And then of course the guy comes back and he's like, yeah, I got one with 300 people on it. Like, thanks, Wade.
Yeah.
Wade's awesome dude. So I know him pretty well. And he's
take the wind out of my sails, huh?
Yeah, he's up in British Columbia. So we'll say A to him.
A.
for all our Canada peeps that hopefully are tuning in.
Love it.
You got anything else you want to talk about?
I think, and me and you talked about this on the phone a couple weeks ago. I think whatever we can do as equipment managers to put a spotlight onto as to what we do for a living and show our line of work to people that aren't educated, I don't want to say educated, but educated in the golf course maintenance profession. Mm-hmm. We need to find a way to get people excited or interested into our profession. Because like me and you talked about, now this might be when we're retired and we might not see this decline, even though we're seeing it right now, mm-hmm. but we might not see the true impact of this decline. But there's not a lot of people knocking at the door to do what we do. And we strongly need that, especially with the COVID golf boom. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping golf just right. takes yeah, off, yeah. Hopefully you know? So. Yeah. I hope it just, this ignites the American love of golf like Tiger did. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that we can sustain through that in our profession. And I know there's you included, there's a lot of people and organizations that are trying to get the word out and broadcast and showcase what we do to get the kids in high school, like myself, I wasn't going to go to a 4-year college and sit right. behind a desk. That's not my personality. It's not me. And you can make a very good living doing what we do. And it's very rewarding. And we have, in my opinion, the best job in the country. I feel like we really need to just have conversations with people. That's what it's going to take. Just, you know, I want to take my fiance's nephew to work and mm-hmm. show him like, hey, you don't need to be a businessman. It's just stuff like that. We just need to have conversation, I think. And I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I agree 100%. And I think this is one of the best jobs. And I come up with this years ago or whatever. One thing that I really like about working at a golf course is I get paid to learn.
Yeah.
And I love learning and I want to learn something new every day and I get paid to learn. So if I worked at a car dealership and I make a bad repair on a car, not that I'm in a practice of doing that, but it's coming back on me. You know, I've never tore this pump apart before and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm tearing it apart. I'm learning.
Right.
And you know, I mean, not that I'm out there trying to do a bad job, but you get it.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Part of it.
It's a job that is, even though we feel like sometimes it can get repetitive in the heat of the summer and we're grinding reels 5-6 days a week, mm-hmm. all day, every day, you get that one time where somebody comes in with something and you scratch your head and you're like, okay, I need to, you know, it keeps you on your toes and every day is different and no, you know, 2 weeks can ever be the same. And it's very rewarding. You know, when sometimes take a step out of the shop and you go out to the golf course and look of the product that you're putting out, it's very rewarding. Especially, if a PGA Tour event, when I got to do that, to see it on TV, to people, you know, people admire the work that you and the grounds crew and your superintendents and everybody, the work that you put in it's instant gratification. It's, yes, you know, it's very, very rewarding in that aspect.
Do you still get excited as much as you've ground a reel cutting a piece of paper?
Oh, there's,
there's nothing like it. I don't know what it is. It's crazy.
Yep. Yeah. And especially going back to the side hustle thing, some of the reels I get in that haven't been touched in,
oh yeah,
sure, 5-6 years, and they got a gap that's 2 inches from the bed knife, and you're like, uh-huh, oh my goodness. And you do your magic, and then you put it on the granite block, and it's, you know, you get it dialed in, you get it, you know, parallel and perfect, and send it out the door, and then the customer sends you a picture of his field striped up, and he's like, oh, we've never seen a cut like this. It's cool. It is. No, it
yeah,
is.
I know. It's awesome. It is. Yeah, and I mean, I'm laughing with you because I've done the exact same thing. You know, the customer's always, it's never cut this good. It didn't cut this good when it was new.
Yep. Just freaking out. Yeah. It's, yep. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the future, of the top tier equipment manager. Guys just got to strive for perfection, and they got to get out of their own way sometimes and adapt. That's going to be another big thing. We're going to start seeing robotic mowers in our lifetime. I mean, in our career, we'll see them. We'll see. I mean, we're already kind of kicking the idea around of going GPS sprayers. That's stuff that I don't know how to work on a GPS sprayer. I mean, it's going to be a lot of adapting, within the next 10 years, I think. And, the guys that are going to shine are going to be the guys that embrace it. And they full steam ahead. Come on, let's do it. You know, you got to have that go-getter mentality. And hopefully we get a good influx of younger guys that start and not to get off track a little bit, but I try to do that with our interns that come through. I like to try to get them in the shop and explain to them why we're doing this the way we're doing this. And maybe they didn't see that at their last course, or, you know, we got guys at the shop now from Whistling Straits. That's all cool season. So, he's asking questions of why we're doing stuff like this on Zoysia or Bermuda grass. And it's, you know, it's cool to see them adapt and learn in that kind of shop setting. So
for sure. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up, Tony. I'm so thankful that you agreed to come on the Real Turf Techs podcast. I hope that all the listeners get something out of this. I've really enjoyed talking to you, sincerely, from the bottom of my heart. This was awesome.
Same, Trent. I appreciate you. I appreciate you letting me on. I'm glad I got to be one of the guinea pigs.
That's right. One of the first, baby.
That's right. I love it, man. I love it. When I heard the idea, I was ecstatic. Again, appreciate you letting me come and spew my ignorance all over the internet. That's great, that's cool.
No,
but you've been great. You need to get to Dallas as soon as you can. You got a room to stay and you got a boat to fish out of. So,
all right. Do I need to bring my NRX rods?
Oh, you're a Loomis boy?
Oh, yeah. I'm a Loomis all the way, man.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Nothing like NRX.
I got a few you can borrow, but you bring your own. Because if you break one, I'm going to have to send you an invoice or something. Those aren't cheap.
No, they're not cheap. they sure are nice. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a tool, right?
It's
just like a tool. That's right. You just keep telling the wife. Hopefully she didn't hear this
exactly
podcast.
Right.
All right, dude. Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Trent. Good to see you, buddy.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Wow. That was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that as much as me and Tony did. Tune in next time when we talk to J.R. Wilson. Thank you so much for listening to the Real Turf Techs podcast. I hope you learned something today. Don't forget to subscribe. If you have any topics you would like to discuss or you'd like to be a guest, find us on Twitter @RealTurfTechs. See you, bye.